Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back to the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Michael Hawley's here. It must be a Tuesday. Is it Tuesday already?
That is correct, Al. And then, you know, just finishing a couple of Jack the Ripper books is, I'm happy.
I guess so. Mr. Ripper himself.
That is correct.
I know it's really you.
Yes, that's right.
So now today, let's just jump into it. We've got a guest waiting. So, and she's written a new book. And it is the Asylum series, book two, and it's called Ascendant. So, Susie Smith, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Nice speaking with you.
Well, Susie, so first of all, let's start this. Now, this is book two of the Asylum series. What exactly is the Asylum series?
Oh, well, the book one starts everything out. It is called Asylum, and it begins after the United States suffers what I label as the big crash. The economy is just obliterated, and the president has declared martial law. Everything is just in chaos. And my protagonist, she's young. Her name is Lacey Monroe, and she makes a decision that, you know, she doesn't know it's going to change her life, but it does. That's usually how things go, that she agrees to stay on her family farm because her uncle asks her to. And so her family leaves. Everybody's gone. She's on this farm, and the government's trying to take over, you know, everything, and she's taking a stand. When everything is ripped away from you, like electricity and food and stuff like that, it kind of makes you think, how am I going to survive? And so she's asking herself, you know, these questions, and there's some others that join her. And among them is a longtime friend. His name is Jace, and he's actually my other protagonist. He's got his own stuff he's dealing with, and he joins her, and it's their journey. Together they overcome incredible odds that threaten to tear them apart, and together they must decide what's right for them. At the end of the book, remain pawns in her uncle's political game or run. And so Ascendant, their story picks up where Asylum left off. I didn't leave Asylum on a cliffhanger. I mean, I resolved it most of the things. I hate it when I read a whole book and you come to the end and you're like, wait a minute, what? So I didn't want to do that. So yeah.
So the government has declared martial law. Is that kind of the background?
Yes, that is okay. The background that they're living in. Actually, the president has declared martial law, and they are rounding up all the citizens and putting them in work camps. So she's actually escaped that and is on the farm and fighting to stay there.
How do you come up with that character? So Lacey Monroe, for instance, one of your main characters, like, is that something, what's your process of doing that? Do you take part of yourself, or is it someone you've based it on?
I haven't really based Lacey on any one person. I would say she's probably a conglomeration of several people. I have green eyes. My girls, both my girls, two of my girls have green eyes. I have four kids, so I get confused.
I have four eyes.
No. Right. And so I made her have green eyes, and she's got dark hair. And, you know, I think some of her personality is just a combination of my girls, I think, because I've lived with them for, you know, raised them through their teenage years, and, you know, I do still have some hair left, but I thought that... I thought I'd had that license to do that, so.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, sometimes that's how you create a character. There's certain traits of a person or a personality and behaviors and stuff like that. So your main character, how do you experience that character when you're writing the dialogue and writing the story? Or do you? Like some people, I ask that because some writers will say, well, I hear their voice in my head, and some will say they see it like a movie. There's all sorts of descriptions. Do you have any of that?
I don't have any of those sensationalized things. I just start writing, and I don't really try to overthink it a lot. I do go by an outline, but very loosely go by an outline. I know, you know, when I start, I know where I want to start. I know where I want to end up. So the outline just helps me through the writing process of writing that muddy middle. I call it the muddy middle to kind of keep it from flagging, because, you know, you never want the middle of the book to, you know, lose your readers. So, but no, I don't hear her voice.
Right. Well, you know, I just ask the questions. we get a lot of people that, well, a lot of people do, right? They get into it, and they totally... Yeah. See themselves as the character, I guess, and they sort of get into it, and that's great. I mean, whatever works.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, my mentor, I consider him my mentor, Bill Bernhardt. He always says, your character's a metaphor. It is not an actual person. It is a metaphor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. It is. Well, you know, but we've got a lot of strange people. They'll do and hear all sorts of things and do whatever. So you never know, right?
Right. Mean,
right,
that's
you can
true.
Be hearing voices and driving down the road.
I really.
Oh, you mean
not.
Other people don't hear voices, Al?
Yeah, it's true. Really, well, yeah. So put your beer down there. Well, you know, it's okay. So it's kind of interesting, but when you take this, and the story is kind of civilization's collapsed, and you've got like a lot of unhappiness and unrest and tension and all that stuff going on. Where do you think that comes from for you?
I think I started really looking around at the world, you know, and in context to stuff like this when 9/11 happened. And I know exactly where I was. I know exactly what I was doing when I found out about 9/11 and that security bubble that I lived in, and I know that's probably true for a lot of people. You know, we're in the United States, everything's fine, no one can touch us, we're this superpower, you know. And then 9/11 happened, and you really have to step back and reassess the world as it is. And that's really where this story started.
So was it the story that first came to you, and then you put the characters and built them into it? Or did you have your characters kind of already pre-written to use in the story?
I have the basic structure of the story when it comes into my head. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's good. And then I start asking, who's going to be in this? You know, what type of character do I need for this situation? So I want to say the character comes first, but actually I really don't think it does in my writing process. I think I have an idea, and then the character just kind of morphs out of it.
So rumor has it that this came from a dream you had?
Yeah. Well, after 9/11, I don't know about y'all, but my imagination, I have a huge imagination. And, you know, when you...
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You get struck by terror or something like that, you tend to have nightmares. And I did. I had a dream. Of a girl, and she was hiding, and she was on my grandparents' land, and actually that's where the setting came from, because I do write about an actual place. There is actually 40 acres that sits on a corner in Osage County, Oklahoma, right outside Shidler, Oklahoma, and that was my grandparents, and I spent a lot of summers out there, most of my childhood summers out there.
Oh, okay.
So it's very personal, that part of it, isn't it? The location.
Yeah, it is. It really, really is. I wish, you know, and I've gone back through photographs and things like that, because I really wish I could show people how it was when I was a kid. You don't want to see it now, but when I was a kid, it would have, you know, somebody would be looking at the picture going, oh, there's the fish house. There's the barn. There's the, you know, so, but I can't, as of yet, I can't find it.
So it was a level of security for you, this farm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So when this all came to your mind and you started putting it together and you're going to put the, you know, write a book and story, did you have a purpose then? Was there is there a meaning you wanted people to get from it at the end of the book?
What happens to Lacey at the beginning of the book, I did think a lot about that. And when I sit down to write something, anything that I write, I want the reader to walk away thinking about a situation or an area that wouldn't normally come to their mind. And so at the back of Asylum, there is I put an author's note in there, and I explained about victims of assault and where they could go. There's a hotline, RAIN, RAINN, is a wonderful website, a place to start if somebody is hurting, you know, and looking for that. It's also probably would be considered a trigger warning for some people, and it doesn't go, it's not graphic. I don't write graphic. I don't write erotic. I don't do that.
Is this a sexual assault you're talking about?
Yes, a sexual assault. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I really want what I write to mean something, to start a conversation. I want to be a part of the big conversation, you know, the big author's conversations.
Yeah, of course. How do you decide to write a series, though? Did you have that in mind? Did you have this at the kind of at the beginning when you were doing book one? Were you thinking of this being several books in a series, or was it just going to be a one-off and then it just happened?
It was going to, I really didn't anticipate writing a series. I knew I could. There was potential there, but I really didn't set out to do that. I have another series that I did know that was going to be a series on the back burner, because I needed to go ahead and finish this series. But no, when people started saying, well, what happens next, you know, and I left the ending kind of ambiguous, where the reader can decide, you know, well, do they escape? Yeah, they escape into Mexico. They go and live on a beach, you know, live in a hut, you know, whatever. But I just decided, well, I guess I can write another book. So, and now I'm writing the third one. It'll be a trilogy, and I do plan to put a stop on the end of this one.
Why?
Why? Well, I mean, I could keep going. I've developed characters. That's a funny thing about secondary characters in a book. When you keep pulling them up for situations, they just kind of take on a personality of their own. And there is one character that has risen up, and I just love him. And in Asylum, you wouldn't have thought that, because I kind of made him out to be the bad guy until the very end. Yeah, I could tell his story, you know.
So you don't want to get rid of this world then, especially your characters. It's hard to leave your characters or get rid of them.
Yeah, it is. Because you live with them for so long, and like the first book took me a while to write and get complete. And the first draft, I completely tore up. I was in college. I went to college after my two youngest, my Gen Zs, were in high school. I decided I wanted to go get my degree in English. And so I was working on it then, and I completely tore it apart and started over. So it took me a while. But, you know, I really, really learned how to write on that book, because, you know, I'd do it over. If I didn't like something, I'd do it over. And, you know, 500 drafts later on a paragraph, you finally get it right, you know.
Yeah.
So is the second book, Ascendant, is it based on that sexual assault, or is there a little more of a different theme going?
No, there is something different. I, you know, bad guys and you know, Bill Bernhardt says, you know, when you've got your character in a bad situation, how can you make that situation worse? How can you, you know, just go, you know, crash through that glass ceiling? How do you make it so bad, you know? And so I got to thinking about that, and I had the general idea of where I wanted to go with the book. And I thought, well, how do I make that worse? What would be worse? And then I started thinking about all the human trafficking. My oldest daughter is a police officer. She's kind of taking a break now. But Oklahoma, where I live on the I-35 corridor. And Oklahoma has issues with sex trafficking along that corridor. And so I got to thinking about that and thought, well, you know, if I could put that in there and raise people's, you know, awareness of, you know, sex trafficking, human trafficking, that I thought that would be a good idea. So that's where that came from.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm surprised. I did a book for a publisher on that, on trafficking a few years back. And I was surprised in how many people didn't realize that it even went on in the U.S.
Exactly. Well, there's that security bubble where people are in their first world problems. They don't look around. They don't see what's going on around them. And, you know, that could be detrimental to them as well if they're not paying attention to where they are. You know, I don't travel a lot. I don't, you know, I'm just kind of a homebody. But I know a lot of people do travel, and they do need to be aware of their situation and if someone's following them, or, you know, I mean, everybody has the mentality, well, it can't happen to me, you know, that can't happen to me. But then when it does, you know,
I can see why a dystopian fantasy that right there makes everybody aware things have changed.
Yes, exactly.
I have an author's note at the back of Ascendant as well. There is a website that's called Can You See Me? And you can get some really, really good information from that website. So
you've done two, and now you say you're working on the third book. So this process, it's a lot to you. It sounds like it means a lot to you, and it takes a lot of work. Both Michael and I know the amount of work it takes to put together a book and get it out there. So now at the end of two and working on three, when you look back at it, well, let's just say, how do you think it's changed you?
Well, it's made me, myself, you know, as I write, I become more aware of the things around me because I do research. I don't put anything in there unless I've done my homework, done some research on it and stuff. So, very much, has changed my attitude and my viewpoint.
Okay, so you carry pepper spray in your in your purse and a gun.
I have. Let me tell you what I have. I'm in Oklahoma. I'm in Oklahoma. So there's an open carry license here. I don't have a gun. I will not touch guns. I mean, and I'm not going to open up a conversation about guns. But I have a BB gun.
There you go.
I have a BB gun. You know, I'm very opinionated about that, and I won't start. But yeah, I do. I have a BB gun in my floorboard of my car, just in case.
You know, that would be good for let's say you have a dystopian world of the birds again. The birds are attacking. Yeah. That BB gun is there.
That's right.
You're ready for the birds.
For sure. Right. Well, you know, I mean, a BB gun, I can just shoot the crap out of, you know, somebody with a BB gun and turn around and run, and it's going to take them a second to kind of get their bearings, especially if I shoot them in the eye.
There you go.
You know, but I haven't killed them, mm-hmm. and I don't have that on my conscience. And that I feel like I address that in Ascendant because my main character has had to do that in order to survive. And at the end of the book, she is feeling the weight of that and how it changes you and how it just marks your soul. I BB guns. Yeah, that's it for me.
So you don't lack remorse like the usual serial killers we write about. And, so bummer. I like that, lacking remorse. That's the fun part.
Yeah, no. No.
Yeah, no.
Because, you know, yeah, no. I mean, for a character that, you know, people have invested their time in reading and stuff like that, you kind of want the character to go through a change, and hopefully it's for the better, you know. in the book. So, of course, she's going to have to look at that and deal with that backlash of what she's done.
Just drink.
that's my department.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you have any problem writing in the book itself the bad characters, the evil ones, or the people that do bad things, and getting into the mindset of that person?
Maybe a little. Well, there again, I always have that Bill Bernhardt in the back of my head going, how do you make it worse? How do you make it worse? How can he be worse? You know? So I kind of try to keep that in mind. The uncle isn't, you know, the uncle in the story, he's bad, but he's bad because he's selfish and he wants what he wants and he doesn't care, who he mows over, to get what he wants. But he does have, you know, there's some ambivalence there where you kind of feel for him at times, but, not very often. So not often enough to matter, but I do kind of humanize him at least. Now the other bad guy, I don't, the one in Ascendant, the, human trafficker, I don't. He is just bad.
Bill Bernhardt, that's BB. So in your BB gun, I think there's a connection right there, don't you?
Yeah.
So that's how bad he is. Big, bad, a lot of BBs.
A lot of BBs.
Your next book could be called BB.
Yeah, right. No, I think he's going to make me stick with the A's. The second book I originally wanted to call Leverage because that's really the core, you know, the uncle is using leverage. I mean, I guess it was two on the nose. So I racked my brain for a name and came up with that one, and he likes it. But I think I'm ahead of the game with this one. I think I have
the third book?
I think I have a name for the third one, but I'm...
Oh, I know. Al.
Al.
No. I like that one.
No, that's a terrible name.
I think it's going to be Annihilation, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's like your book, Annihilon. That's no. Well, it's pretty interesting how this all goes and each book that you do. Where do you see this going now? Like, where did you do you see an end actually with three, or do you think it could go further?
Well, I am still sort of, you know, I really want to put an end stop to it because I really want to get to my YA series that's been on the back burner that, you know, has for so long. But I am torn on how I am actually going to end it.
You don't have to end it. I mean, you could always, like, take a break and then do one of your YA books and then come back to one of these and back and forth. I know a couple that do that.
Yeah, you would think. But my brain is like a one-way footbridge. I cannot work on two things at once to save my life. I cannot do it. I am terrible at multitasking.
Yeah, because that's sometimes, I know some writers that do that, and it seems to work. Are you conscious of your reader now that you're, when you're writing? Because like now, your first book, of course, you weren't, right? You're putting out the first book, and now you've got the second one out, and you're writing the third. So are you thinking about your reader and how they would feel about what you do to your characters or where it goes and stuff?
Oh, yeah, of course, yes. Definitely. I definitely do. It is a lot different now that I'm on the third one. I don't, you know, and I always, I'm always conscious of my language. There's some curse words in there, but I'll write and I'll just write the way it comes out. And then I will go back and take out all those bad words that I put in there and stick them all in there, you know, because nobody wants to read a book like that. But, you know, at the same time, I do have a good argument for that. A lot of people talk that way. A lot of people have, you know, especially bad guys have filthy mouths, but I really don't want to do that. So I am conscious of other people, and what they, how they take it.
Well, yeah, you have to draw the line somewhere. There has to be
right.
Realism, but also you can kind of monitor that realism. You don't have to go overboard. It doesn't have to be a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Right.
You know, it can be some realism and a few rough, edgy words for sure, or right. Behaviors, but you can tone it down. It doesn't make it unbelievable.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. Who is your favorite character in this book?
In the first book, it would have to be Kat. She is, she's kind of mostly a secondary character, but she's in most of it. She's quirky. She says weird things. She tries to keep Lacey in line and the boys and everybody on the farm fed, and she kind of just takes on that responsibility of a surrogate mother. And I think she really makes Lacey not feel so alone. She kind of is a surrogate mother, like I said. And there's a lot of found family in this book. You know, blood sometimes doesn't equal family.
So relationships and love are a big part of your books.
Yeah, whether I want it that way or not, yeah.
Well, that's okay. Do you think about the violence you write on the page and how you display it?
Yeah. You were talking about evil characters. I can envision evil characters, but writing the horrible things that an evil character would do, I need help. My writing process.
BB, just think BB.
BB, yeah. My writing process is I'll write a chapter and I'll send it to my best friend in West Virginia. And she is the grammar Nazi. And she reads it and grades it like a paper and, you know, tears it up, tells me what I need to put on there. The last one I got back, I just looked real quick at one of the things she wrote, one of her comments. She goes, "Really? ?" I was like, oh no. But she really helps with that perspective. She'll go, well, you need this or you need that or, you know, that kind of thing.
Have you ever gotten into a writing part of a story or part of it where it just wasn't working? You didn't like where it was going and you just eliminate it? Does that ever happen?
Well, yeah, especially in the first one. Like I said, the first one, I completely tore the first draft apart. I took some elements out of it, you know, the core story, of course, but everything around it I changed because I don't know if you'll know what I mean, harsh enough. It just didn't hit home like I wanted it to.
So, Susie, I'm gathering you're just too much of a nice person. You need your best friend to rip it right apart.
Yeah, she does. She does. I think part of it might come from the sheltered life I lived when I was a child.
Ooh, maybe deep down you're evil?
An evil side, yes. I was raised, you know, I'm a Gen X, but I was raised by silent generation parents. And so I had parents at home. I wasn't a latchkey kid, you know. So I have a different kind of had a different experience growing up.
Well, I think it's okay to get into the process of writing evil characters or bad people doing bad things and doing it. I think there's just the bigger picture of having the reader understand why they are doing what they're doing, right? Because there's always a bigger picture. Like usually the bad guy is doing it for a reason. They think they're doing something good or for a good reason or something. They're in a twisted world where
right.
They believe what they're doing is something that should be done, right? So if you can get that across to the reader, a lot of times for me, that'll be my focus if I'm writing something on the dark side, so to speak, because then it's not foul language and it's not really grotesque sort of behavior. It's more about this character thinking what they're doing is something, you know, heroic or something good
right.
or something positive, even though it's not.
Right. Their motive. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times if the direction is towards that, the motive, as you say, then maybe it's not so hard to read.
Right. Yeah.
You know, right. Or if you get into Michael's books, you're just, you know, you need to have a lot of liquor
Well, that's where it started from, Al. That's where it started from.
Well, you know, I really like, I don't know if you've heard of this author before, because I think he publishes on the Christian side, but he's not, I wouldn't really, I mean, yeah, elements of it, but Ted Dekker, brilliant author. And I go back and read some of his stuff sometimes, and I have a shelf full of Stephen King that I, you know, draw back, you know.
Oh, he can be really ruthless, Stephen King.
Yeah.
So.
Stephen King. Now, he writes what, horror? I don't know him.
Right, yeah. You don't know him.
No. Let me write down his name, and I'll look for him. See if I can find him on Amazon. I might look him up. Maybe he's got some books I can read. I don't know. Wow, it's interesting. So, what do you find to be the hardest part so far? You know, new writer and getting things going, and you're out there doing stuff now. You got book two out and everything. So, if someone was listening and they're thinking about writing, or maybe they do write but they've never gotten this far, they've never published anything, what's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge for me is this.
Oh, speaking to me. Well, no,
I'm just kidding. No,
I agree. I hate talking to myself.
The marketing, I think, that's what I meant, is marketing has been the biggest issue for me, because I don't really want to mess with that. I want to write. I want to hand it over. And I want to go on to the next thing that I'm working on. I don't think about marketing. My brain is not wired that way. You know, social media, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, but...
No TikTok?
Oh, I'm on TikTok.
Oh, there you go.
I am on TikTok. Well, I went through a TikTok binge, I guess, where, you know, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to conquer TikTok. But, yeah, there's no conquering TikTok.
Al's on TikTok, so you should watch Al's TikTok.
I will get some ideas.
I've got almost 50,000 followers.
Wow.
Yeah.
People love to hate me, I'll tell you.
I will definitely look you up then.
Oh, I just do silly stuff and the show. That's it, you know, and people love it or hate it, you know, and then they all have to say something. But it's good. It's good. I think it's okay. It's a good way of interacting with people. But I personally agree. I know it's tough to do the marketing sense, even though, you know, God, I'm on radio and all stuff. But the thing is, I know what you mean. I don't even like going to book signings. It feels weird.
It does. I mean, this has been more comfortable for me, I think, because you're not staring at me. I'm a little bit more.
You don't know that because.
Al's
got all this technology. So he's staring at you right now. Yeah, look behind you right now.
Yeah. This is on TikTok. It's being streamed.
Well, that might be good for me, because if this was streamed on TikTok, maybe they'd go find me and I'd have, you know, blow up. But, you know, depends on, I think, the luck of the draw, maybe.
It's all the right place, right time, saying the right thing.
But, yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter. It's more about branding you. It's just getting to know who you are and what you're writing and stuff like that. I think that's the most important thing, because it's a weird process to get used to it. I'd say, you know, like I said, someone said sign a book, and you're like, well, God, when I worked at McDonald's, I didn't sign your Happy Meal.
Right? That's right. I'm like, you know, because family will ask me to sign it, and I'm like, I'm your mother. I'm your daughter. I'm your, you know, why do you want me to sign it?
it's the strangest thing in the world. Weird. Like, you don't, when you're in a regular job doing stuff, people don't want that.
I'm opposite. I just love doing that stuff. And then, you know, just shaking everybody's hand. And I'm one of those type of people. You got to be in the front.
He signs my books.
I figured out his handwriting.
Yeah, I need to put it.
Hi, I'm Al.
I need to put together a street team that will do all that stuff
for me.
Yeah. That's
right.
Yep. Just get Michael. He'll do it. He'll go out and sign all your books.
Of course. So my voice is not the same, though, Susie. My voice is not. But I can try.
Yeah.
I'll just put on a wig and you'll be fine. You know?
I'll be set.
A big huge hat with flowers on it. Nobody will notice.
Yeah. Can I keep my goatee though? I need that.
No, you know, then you better wrap a veil around the face or something. And say, you know, she's just, you know, she burns easy, so she's got to have a, you know, veil over the face, you know.
That's right.
Well, that's really cool. So, well, I'm glad everything's going well for you. So now you say you're on TikTok and you're on all those things. Is it under your name or is it under, do you have a street name?
A street name. No, it is under my name. I spell my name, my first name, S-U-S-Y, and my website is SusieSmith.com. So as long as you spell my name right, I think you'll get there. Yeah.
Now, you must have been writing the first book or maybe even the second one. You must have been doing a lot of the writing during the pandemic and all that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of affected you? Did you draw off of that and did it become darker?
Yeah, I finished the first book when everybody went home. You know, everything shut down. The Kaw Nation shut down. I work for the Kaw tribe, and the tribe shut down. And so they sent us home. And so I was sitting here, and I'm like, I am going to get this done. And so, yeah, it definitely did push me in the right direction.
I bet it could help with some of the characters. If you watch the news and you watch some of the people and how people were acting and reacting to different things with each other. And TikTok, you must have saw some really good fights on there. But it could be a really good influence for characters in a way.
Yeah, it could. The whole virus thing, I thought about that, but it's been done.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're better to stay away from it in a book, I think.
Yeah.
Personally. I mean, because it's too soon. And so there's just too much, you know, in 50 years you could do it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You know.
That's if there's still the world. I mean, I don't know. I mean, hopefully you're getting happier in your YA. Is your YA going to be a mystery or is it more, what would the YA be when you're writing?
My YA is going to be a paranormal.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So you ghost hunter, you're out there hunting ghosts.
Man, I'd love to do that. There, you know, I live in Oklahoma, so Guthrie has a haunted hotel, and Eureka Springs, which I'm fairly close to, the Crescent Hotel is haunted, and we went there and did a ghost tour and stuff like that. And I've done ghost tours in New Orleans and stuff like that, but I'd really like to go with a team and just kind of see their process.
Yeah.
That'd be super cool.
Been there, done that several times.
Yes.
Used to do that a lot. Hey, I can set you up with some people.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's good, sort of. It's tiring, but when you're there.
Right.
Let me just tell you, because it's all night and you're really tired and nothing really happens. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, takes forever for anything, you know, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, that's good. Well, there we go. So now your book is out now, and it's called Ascendant.
Yes.
And that's the second book in the series of Asylum. And again, thank you for being on the show. Our guest, Susie Smith.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Nice speaking with you, Susie.
Nice to speak with you, too.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.